Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads against the foe. Forward into battle, see his banner.
Ah, yes, shalom aleichem to all my pure-blooded white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. The show is Word for Word. I am Pastor Steve, and this show is for Friday, the 18th of August, 2017. We are still in the book of Job. We have two more shows to go, this one and the one on Monday. We're going to be starting with chapter 38 of Job, where Yahweh speaks to Job and sort of humbles him, levels him out to do spiritual repair on him, because Job is a mess right about now. He's been castigated by his friends. He said, but I'm righteous, and he's not all the way. He's arrogant in his righteousness, and he's going to be taken down a peg here. Water and lemon. So let's get right into 38, where Yahweh is speaking to him. Verse 1. Then Yahweh answered Job out of the storm wind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Verse 3, gird up now your loins like a mighty man, for I will inquire of you and make it known to me. Verse 4, where were you when I laid the foundation of the land? Declare if you have knowledge and understanding. Who has laid the measures of it, if you know? Or who has stretched the line upon it? And they're speaking, that's 6957. That's a measuring line. Let me flip this page over here. That's call. Who has stretched upon it the measuring line? 6957. Upon what? Okay, that they have whereupon, but that changes the text. It's upon what are the pillars? They have foundations. The pillars of the earth is what he's speaking of. Number 134. Upon what are the pillars of it sunk? 2883. Or who has laid? 3384. That means to cast something. Who has laid the cornerstone of it? Verse 7. They really chopped this up, and I had to straighten the word order out in verse 7. You can reference Baruch 3, verse 34. Verse 7, now this is the proper word order. When sang joyfully together the stars of the morning and shouted for joy all the sons of Elohim. Now we have verse 8, and verses 8 through 11. You can reference the book of Jeremiah, chapter 5, 22. Verse 8. Or who shut up the sea with doors when it broke forth as if it had issued out of the womb. Verse 9, when I made the cloud the garment of it, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and broke up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors. In other words, he puts limits to the sea. Verse 11, and said, hitherto shall you come, but no further. And here shall your proud waves be fixed a limit. In other words, he made the borders of the sea. Said, you can come this far, but no further. This is where you stop. Verse 12, they changed the word order in verse 12. Since your days have you commanded the morning and caused to know the dawn his place? Verse 13, that it might take hold of the corners of the land, that the wicked might be shaken out of it. It is turned as clay to the seal. And they stand forth as a garment. Verse 15. And from the wicked their light is withheld, and the high arm shall be broken. The arm that is lifted up of power, like George Soros and his arm of power, it's going to be broken. All these wicked bankers and politicians that they have temporary power, they're not even going to see the light of day. That's what this is talking about. The dawn. The light of dawn will be withheld from them. Verse 16. Have you entered into the springs of the sea, or in the search of the depths have you walked? Now that's different word order than in the King James. They changed the word order. I put it back the way it is in the Hebrew. Oh boy. Here's one I... Oh. I'm operating out of a King James Bible. I hadn't had a chance to computerize this. Have been revealed unto thee the gates of death, or the gates of the shadow of death, have you seen? I have little lines and arrows to work. To correct the word order. It's sort of funny, really, but it's hard to read. Verse 18, have you perceived the breadth of the land? That means the width. 7338. It sounds like breath, but it's breadth. Have you perceived the width of the land? Declare it, if you know it, all. In other words, how much do you know? You think you're righteous, but do you have any idea about any of this stuff? He's putting him down quite a bit. Verse 19. Where then is the way where dwells light? And as for darkness, where is the place of it? That, verse 20, that you should take it to the boundary of it, and that you should discern the paths to the house of it. This is all very poetic. Do you know it because you were then born, or because the number of your days is great? In other words, because you're an elder, do you know all these things? Verse 22, have you entered into the storehouses of the snow, or the storehouses of the hail have you seen? They really chopped that verse up too. Verse 23, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war. Verse 24, by what way is divided the light which scatters the east wind upon the land? Verse 25, who has divided a watercourse for the torrents, or a way for the lightning of thunder, to cause it to rain on the land where no man is, the wilderness wherein there is no Adam? Verse 27. Let me get a little drink of water here. Verse 27. To satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause to spring forth the growth of the tender grass. If you're reading in a King James, that's not the way it reads, because they changed the word order of the sentence. Verse 28. Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? Verse 29. Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of the sky? Who has engendered it? Verse 30. This is changed. As a stone, the waters are hid, and the face of the deep compacts. Now the word is compacts, that's 3920, and it means it compacts by freezing. Even deep lakes freeze over. Verse 31, and you can reference Job chapter 9, verse 9, and Amos chapter 5, verse 8. Now I'll explain this verse as soon as I finish reading it. Can you bind the fetters, 4575, of Kema? Or loose the bands, 4189, of Kessil? Now, Kema is Pleiades. That's 3598. And Kessil is Orion, 3885. Those are constellations. Verse 32. Can you bring forth Maseroth in a season? Maseroth is 4216. Or can you guide Aish with his sons? And that's Arcturus, 5908, Aish. Verse 33. Do you know the ordinance of the sky? Can you set the dominion thereof in the land? Verse 34, can you lift up your voice to the clouds that abundance of waters may cover you? Verse 35, can you send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are? Verse 36, who has put wisdom in the inward parts? Or who has given understanding to the mind? Verse 37. Who can number the clouds in wisdom? Or who can lay over the skin bottles of the sky? And the skin bottles are a figurative for clouds of the sky. So it rains. In other words, who can overturn the bottles of the sky so it leaks out in rain? This is poetic language here. Verse 38, when the dust sets into hardness and the clods cleave fast together, when the land dries up from lack of rain and it just gets like concrete and cracks. Verse 39, will you hunt the prey for the lion or fill the appetite of the young lions? Verse 40, when they crouch in their dwelling places and abide in the booth to lie in wait, that's a brush shelter. They're laying down under the brush trying to find prey. Verse 41, who provides for the raven his food? When his young ones cry unto El, they wander for lack of food. You know, can you do any of these things, Mr. Righteous Man? That's what he's saying to Job. You're righteous and you're complaining and you're doing all this other stuff, but who are you? What are you? Where do you get your self-righteousness from? Chapter 39 continues in the same vein. Do you know the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Or can you mark when the does calve? Verse 2. Can you number the months that they fulfill? In other words, how long is their gestation period? Or know you the time when they bring forth? Verse 3, they bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones, they cast out their sorrows. And in this verse, verse 4, number 7235 and 1250 are in Aramaic usage here. Verse 4, their young ones are healthy. They grow up in the open field. And there's 7235 and 1250. They go forth and return not unto them. In other words, they grow up and then they go have their own life. Who has sent out the wild ass free? Or who has loosed the bands of the wild ass? Now there's two usages. The first, who has sent out the wild ass? That is 6501 for wild ass. Or who has loosed the bands of the wild ass? That is 6171 for the wild ass. In other words, who set those wild donkeys free? Who unbound them so they could just go out and proliferate out there? All right, this continues about the wild ass. His house I have made. Oh, pardon me. I've got lines and arrows again. Whom I have made the desert plain his house. There we go. And his dwellings the barren land. That concerns the wild donkeys. Verse 7. He scorns the multitude of the city. Neither regards he the shouting of the taskmaster, because he's a free wild donkey. Doesn't pay any attention. He's not a burden animal. He's free. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and after every green thing he searches. Because he's just grazing out on the open range. He's not a domesticated animal. Here comes the wild ox, verse 9. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you or abide by your crib? They were wild oxen. They were feral. They were big and fierce. Verse 10. Can you bind the wild ox in the furrow with ropes? In other words, can you make him plow for you? Or will he harrow the valleys after you? Verse 11. Will you trust him because his strength is great? Or will you leave your labor to him? Verse 12. Will you believe him and he will bring home your seed and gather it into your threshing floor? Now here is another chopped up verse. Made you to flap joyously the wings of the ostrich? Are her feathers and plumage as the stork? Okay, it's 2624 is from 2623. Kind is the stork is kind to its young. Okay, that's what it implies. Are her feathers and plumage as the kind to its young as the stork? This is very convoluted. They really have chopped up these verses, and it's very hard to read them. The mistranslations of the King James Bible are really bad. Okay. Now this is referring to the ostrich. Verse 14, because she leaves her eggs in the ground and warms them in the dust. Verse 15, and forgets that the foot may crush them, or that the living creatures of the field may tread on them. Verse 16, she is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear. 6:3-4:3. Verse 17. Because Eloah has made her forget wisdom, neither has he imparted to her understanding. In other words, she's just a stupid bird, and she lays her eggs and covers them up with dust and walks away. What time she flaps her wings on high, she scorns the horse and his rider. Because literally, don't know whether you know this, an ostrich can outrun a horse. Verse 19, have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed his neck with a quivering mane? Now that's 7483, and that's very uncertain right here, that quivering mane deal. Verse 20, can you make him tremble as a locust? The splendor of his snorting is dreadful. Now you get a horse that's out of control and is big and strong, and you got a problem. Verse 21, he paws in the valley, that means digs with his hoof, and rejoices in his strength. He goes on to meet the battle. War horse. He mocks at fear and is not frightened. Neither turns he back from the sword. He doesn't fear the battle. Verse 23, the quiver rattles against him, the flashing spear and the javelin. Because they tied the quiver on the horse, you know, for arrows, for horse archers. With trembling and rage, he swallows the ground. Neither believes he that it is the sound of the shofars. He says, in abundance, in the abundance of the shofars, aha, and he smells the battle afar off. The thunder of the officers and the shouting. They're talking about pitched battle with horses and swords and spears in that time period. That's what this verse is about. And the war horse gets his blood up and he wants to rush into the battle. Here we, different subject, verse 26. By your understanding, does the hawk fly and stretch her wings toward the south? Verse, these are all changed around in the King James. I'm straightening them out. At your command, does mount up the eagle and make her nest on high? Fly high up into the sky is what they're talking about. This poetry here is difficult. Verse 28. They've changed all these verses around, so I've got them straightened out with arrows and notes. And on the rock she dwells and abides. Upon the crag of the rock and the stronghold. From there she searches for food. And from afar off her eyes look upon it. Verse 30, her young ones also suck up blood. That's eagles, they're carrying animals. And where the slain are, there is she. In other words, they come down and eat the corpses after a battle. Everybody thinks eagles are noble. And you can reference Matthew 24:28 and Luke 17:37 for verse 30. So that takes care of 39. Let's get into chapter 40 here. Moreover, Yahweh answered Job and said, shall he that contends with the Shaddai, that means the Almighty, instruct him? He that reproves Eloah, let him answer it. In other words, are you going to correct God? Here we go. Verse 3. Then Job answered Yahweh and said, behold, I am vile. 7043. What shall I answer you? My hand I will lay upon my mouth. In other words, he's been shamed. And the Hebrew tradition was, at that time, that was the manner. If you were ashamed, you covered your mouth with your hand and you didn't speak. It was a sign of humility and contrition. That's that bottle of water. I need to open another one. Verse 5, this is Job speaking. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. In other words, I'm just going to shut my mouth because I've made a fool of myself. Then answered Yahweh unto Job out of the storm wind and said, gird up your loins now like a mighty man. I will inquire of you and make it known you to me. Verse 8, will you also break my judgment? Will you condemn me that you may be righteous? This is Yahweh talking to him. Ooh. Verse 9. If you have an arm like it, or have you an arm like El, that means a divine being, or can you thunder with a voice like him? Verse 10. Deck yourself now with majesty and grandeur and array yourself with splendor and glory. Verse 11, scatter abroad the rage of thy wrath, and behold every one that is proud, and humble him. In verses 8 and 9, the notation said that Job had no authority to judge God. Because he had complained that he wasn't getting justice. Verse 12. Look on everyone that is proud and humble him, and tread down the wicked in their place, or where they stand. Verse 13. Hide them in the dust together and bind their faces in darkness. Verse 14. Then will I also confess to you, and that your own right hand can save you. That's a symbol of power. In other words, you have to save yourself. Verse 15. Behold now, Behemoth, 930. That's a hippopotamus. which I made with you. He eats grass as an ox. Verse 16. Lo, now his strength is in his loins, and his manly vigor is in the muscles of his belly. Verse 17. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are intertwined. Verse 18. His bones are as strong pieces of bronze. His bones are like bars of iron. Verse 19. He is the best of the ways of El. He that made him can make his sword to approach unto him. Verse 20, surely the mountains bring him forth food, where all the living creatures of the field make sport. Verse 21, he lies under the lotuses and the covering of the reed and marshes. That's the habit of the hippopotamus, because they were on the African continent. And they were all, things were different then. They had a lot more water and lakes and stuff. Verse 22, the lotuses cover him with their shadow. The willows of the brook surround him. Verse 23, behold, a river oppresses him. Now, he oppresses a river. No, that's wrong. A river oppresses him. That's as water rushing over him. And he hasteth not. He trusts that he could burst forth a very Jordan into his mouth. He can take the waters of the Jordan in his mouth. Verse 24, he takes it with his eyes. His nose pierces through snares. In other words, nobody can capture this hippopotamus in those days. He just breaks any snares. Now, in the Hebrew, which they have changed in the King James, there are 32 verses to this chapter. Verse 1 of chapter 41 in your King James is verse 25 in the Hebrew, because this is a continuing thought and they have played with the word order. The word order and the sentences in the King James is wrong. They have tampered with it. So this is verse 25 in the Hebrew, verse 1 of 41 in English. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? That's probably a crocodile, okay? Or his tongue with a cord, which you sink down like fishing. You can reference Psalm 74, 14, Psalm 104, 26, and Isaiah 27, verse 1. Verse 26, or verse 2 in the English, can you put a cord of reeds into his nose, or bore his jaw through with a thorn? Crocodile? I don't think so. Verse 27, will he make supplications to you? Will he speak soft words to you? Or will he bite your leg off? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him for a servant forever? You can take a crocodile as a servant. Will you make sport with him as with a bird? or will you bind him for your maidens? Shall the partners make a trade of him? Shall they divide him among the merchants? And that is Kanani, because the Canaanites were merchants. Can you fill his skin with harpoons, or his head with fish spears? Lay upon him your hand. Remember the battle. Do no more. That's Leviathan. Now that ends chapter 40 in the Hebrew. And that's the first 8 verses of 41 in the English. So we've got 41 and 42 I may be able to get the rest of this chapter 41 in the Hebrew there are 26 verses in chapter 41 because the first 8 verses were in chapter 40. This is chapter 41 in the Hebrew. It's verse 9 in chapter 41 in the English. Behold, the hope of him is a lie. Shall not one be cast down even at the sight of him? Big crocodile coming after you. Verse 2. None are so fierce that dare rouse him up. Who then will take a stand before me? If you're afraid of a crocodile, why aren't you afraid of God? That's what he said there. Who has confronted me that I should requite him? Who is under the whole sky, or whatsoever is under the whole sky, is mine. In other words, Yahweh made the whole world. Verse 4. I will not be silent about his parts, nor his power, nor the grace of his symmetry. Who can reveal the face of his garment? Or with his double bridle can come to him? Are you going to go and put a bridle and ride a crocodile? Verse 6. Who can open the doors of his face? Now that's the jaws, okay? Doors as jaws, okay? 18:17 is a metaphor for jaws of the crocodile. His teeth are terrible roundabout. Verse 7. Verse 7, scales here are a figurative as a shield. The furrows of his scales are his pride, and the scales are as a shield. Closed up together as with a close seal. In other words, you can throw a spear at a crocodile and it'll just bounce off. Verse 8. One is so near to another that no air can come between them. Speaking about the construction of the scales of the crocodile. Because they had those great big giant Nile crocodiles in those days. They're the biggest of the species and they can eat a man in a heartbeat. Verse 9. Verse 9, they are joined one to another. They grasp each other that they cannot be sundered. In other words, you can't break them apart. Verse 10, by his sneezes a light shines, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the dawn. This is all poetic descriptions of a crocodile. Verse 11, out of his mouth go burning lamps and sparks of fire escape. This is poetic. Remember, crocodiles don't breathe fire. Out of his nostrils goes smoke as out of a boiling pot of reeds. Because in the early morning when he snorts, the air in his lungs is warmer than the air, warmer and moisture than the air outside of him, and it comes out like steam. Like you see your breath when it's cold, that's what he's describing right there. His being, or his passions as emotions, 5315, kindles coals, and a flame goes out of his mouth. In his neck remains strength, and sorrow dances before him. This is all poetic description. This is not reality. There's no fire-breathing crocodiles. Verse 15, the folds of his flesh are joined together. They are set in themselves. They cannot be moved. In other words, you can't hurt this animal, not with the spears and stuff of that day. His heart is set hard as a stone, yea, as hard as a piece of the lower millstone. Verse 17, at his uprising, the mighty are afraid. By reason of breakings, they purify themselves. Verse 18, the sword of him that overtakes him cannot stand. The spear, the dart, nor the javelin. Verse 19, he counts iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. This big Nile crocodile, they are tremendously powerful. They have the arrow here, and literally in Hebrew, the son of the bow, as an arrow, cannot make him flee. Sling stones are turned with him into stubble. In other words, he's telling about a big Nile crocodile. Can't hurt him. Only a very high-powered rifle can kill him. Verse 21, darts are counted as stubble. He laughs at the shaking of a spear. Verse 22, sharp potsherds are under him. He spreads sharp pointed things upon the mire. Verse 23, he makes the deep to boil like a pot. Have you ever seen a crocodile really writhe and move fast? It looks like the water's boiling. National Geographic documentaries and stuff, you watch them. You watch these huge Nile crocodiles. They're twice as big as other crocodiles. He makes the sea like a pot of ointment, because the Nile spread out and went down into the sea, and they could do salt water or fresh water, the brackish waters of the opening of the Nile River into the sea, where it runs into the sea. They were at home in all those waters out there. Verse 24, he makes a wake to shine after him. One would think the deep to be gray-headed. In other words, he's swimming so fast he leaves a wake. Upon the earth, that's 6083, there is not his likeness. who is made without fear. Verse 26. He beholds all high things. He is a king over all the children of pride. And that ends verse 41. Now we have 10 minutes and I don't have enough time to do verse 42, which is the last verse, or chapter 42, which is the last chapter of Job. So, on Monday, I will do the last chapter of Job. And then I will do the introduction to the Song of Solomon. A lot of people are confused by the Song of Solomon. It is about Israel. It's a love song to Israel. And that's got a lot of people. It's got some things in there, you know, that need a lot of explanation. And I will get into that at length. I have to really work on the translations over the weekend here to make sure, because it's short. And I want to have everything, all my ducks in a row with that. I haven't spent a lot of time on it. It is not a book of prophecy. It is part of the poetic writings. That's what the Song of Solomon is. The Song of Songs. Okay? They've got a bunch of different names for it. We're getting down to the end, really, this year, of the Old Testament. I'll finish Job on Monday and I'll get into the Song of Songs. That's going to be a short one. Then the Book of Lamentations. That's short. Then Ecclesiastes. That's short. Then Esther. That's short. Ezra and Nehemiah, that's Nehemiah, are longer. There is a lot of historical significance and teachings in both those books. Then we have the long books of Chronicles, 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles. Those are originally called the Words of the Days of the Kings of Israel. And they were one book back in the day, but they have separated a lot of the books, like 1st and 2nd Samuel. That was all one book. So they're doing the same with Chronicles. There's a lot of connection to the Book of Kings and Samuel with Chronicles, and that's going to take detailed explanation because of the notes and cross references. There's a lot in Kings that is word for word in Chronicles. They repeat a lot. That was the Hebrew style of writing. They just did that. I didn't write these books. I'm just teaching out of them. So I need to give you an explanation. Well, I heard that before. Yeah, you probably did. You probably did. They'll repeat things in the same book. They are very redundant in their writings from back in those days. So we've had a real good run with it. Following the conclusion of the Old Testament, I will be getting into the apocryphal books, and Jasher and Jubilees and the Book of Enoch. And then next year, when I'm done with the inner Testament books, the historical things, I will start into the New Testament, and we'll be doing Greek word studies. And I'm pretty familiar with the Greek, but I'm going to have to really prepare and get all the words lined out. And my main focus in the New Testament will be comparing the Greek with the Hebrew language, because they were trying in the Greek to say what they were saying in the Hebrew. And it does not translate well. Like they came up with Jesus instead of Yahshua. Yah is salvation. That was a glaring error. And it's very confusing, because there is no word Jesus. That's just something that they tried to convey, and they failed pretty badly. It didn't work out well. So we've had this Jesus thing, and EA is where it came from. And it's got a convoluted history. So the Greek is going to be fun. It's going to be a challenge to me as well as to you, because a lot of the Greek does not translate well. The New Testament, quote unquote, was originally written in Hebrew or Aramaic. And none of those texts, except some partial fragments of Matthew, are still around today, because the materials they used to write them down fell apart over time. They just would not stand the test of time. They were made out of papyrus and animal skins, very thin animal skins, and the climate there made them crumble. That's just how it is. You know, a lot of historical documents, the paper was acid-based paper, and it self-destructs, because the acid eats the fibers of the paper, and the pages just crumble into dust. Well, such was the case with the early versions of the Bible. Well, we're down to the end of the hour here. I wanted to give you a little game plan heads up for what I'm going to be doing for the faithful that listen. Shalom Aleichem, and hope you have a good weekend. And I'll talk to you on Monday with the last of Job and the beginning of the Song of Solomon. Shalom Aleichem. Praise Yahweh.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads again.